Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery on Round Rock, where we talk about games, comics, and other stuff on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And let's go to the show for this week. It's the Roguecast for Wednesday, June 24th. And gentlemen, we're on the eve of All Ages Awesomeness 5.
Yep. There's preview art going up. Should be all every day this week of the different artists.
Yep.
And I've started compiling it, and it's an awesome catalog of art.
And what's cool, it's a lot of people who haven't been here before.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
People who I've met at Staple, of course, Tom Balin and Stacey Lee from out of town, and we will, of course, have a couple mainstays. Evan Krenson has been here every year.
Yep.
We love Evan, and he does amazing sketches.
Yep.
And
our resident raconteur, Paul Benjamin.
Well, Benjamin, who was only absent for a few years because he was busy being in Uzbekistan.
Yeah, he was overseas.
Yeah.
Well, he could have Skyped in, but that's a lot.
I assume working for the CIA.
Yeah,
he claims his wife worked for the State Department, but we all know that means he worked for the CIA.
He was doing black ops.
And, of course, our semi-regular Matt Frank will be here,
yep,
which
yep.
is really cool. And so, yeah, take a look at those posts and check out the art and definitely come out on Saturday. It's going to be a really fun time.
And tell all your friends.
Yeah, and your enemies.
Sure.
And your enemies' friends.
And your frenemies.
And your frenemies. yeah, so that's this Saturday. And then every other bit of news I got here is in July. So our Magic the Gathering Origins pre-release is on Sunday, July 12th. We'll have all the details on that on our website and all that kind of thing.
We've already had some people signing up for it, so... So the interest is there. Get your name on the list.
Yeah, we were full last time.
Yeah.
We have our Reading with Rogues. We're doing East of West on July 14th. We're going to do that at BJ's Brewhouse. I might have said Mesa Rosa, but we decided BJ's Brewhouse.
Yep.
We looked into Kirby Lane, but Tuesday is their Kids Eat Free Night. And when I asked the hostess, hey, maybe we could do that, she wasn't one of us laughed at me. So I don't think that's going to happen. However... that next Monday, July 20th, we will be doing our Gaming with Rogues. We're going to try that at Kirby Lane, and we're going to play Takenoko, the game of bamboo production and keeping the holy panda away from your bamboo.
Yep.
Which looks like a lot of fun.
I want to play that.
Yeah.
It's got a panda.
Yeah, it's got a panda. Finally, there is the Ant-Man Micro Tournament in July. This is a HeroClix tournament.
Mm-hmm.
It's a limited, only some stores get to run it. Basically, it's a you buy a booster.
We're one of them.
We're one of them. No, we're not. I'm just mentioning it.
Suck it, other stores.
Yeah, we're running that. It's Saturday, July 18th because it's the weekend of our of Ant-Man's release. That's the deal with that,
yep.
that tournament. It's usually we do Mondays for HeroClix,
mm-hmm.
but basically you'll buy a booster and then you'll pick one figure out of the booster and then you'll pass it and you'll pick a figure out of the next booster until you have
draft
a team of
style.
Until you have a team of five,
yeah.
and you'll compete in groups of four. And there's like I think there's two round elimination, and the winners will get a cool Ant-Man ID card.
Oh, that is cool.
Which is a limited thing. There's not very many of them. So if you have any interest in HeroClix, that'd be a fun tournament to come out for. And if you can't do Mondays, we're having a Saturday HeroClix tournament.
We've got a really good HeroClix crowd. I got to say,
yeah.
They're good guys. You know, some good players in there. But since I work every Monday night with the Clix guys. They are not jerks. I am proud to say they're actually a really good bunch of guys.
So that's all the July news. But there is one last bit of summer news, which you may have seen on the website, you may not have. But we are going to be doing a comic grab bag giveaway throughout the summer. Actually, it's more of a comic grab box.
I was going to say bag.
It is a box of assorted comics. There's somewhere between 100, 150, maybe a little more in each box.
Are big prize boxes.
Big prize boxes. We did our best to give some story arcs. There's some random issues. It's got Marvel, DC, Valiant,
yep.
Image, all kinds of stuff in there. Probably some books you haven't read. So if you're not flooded with comics, if you would like some extra reading material for the summer, basically all you got to do is come in on a Wednesday, spend over $20, you'll get your name in a drawing, and we'll be giving away boxes every week
yep.
until we run out of them.
Big boxes.
So big boxes of free.
I like big boxes and I cannot lie.
Big boxes of free comics. So again, tell your friends if anybody's like, if you have any casual, like, oh, I like comics, but they're too expensive. $20 gets you a chance to win 150 comics.
You other brothers can't deny.
Tell your enemies.
Tell your enemies. Tell your frenemies. So that will be going on all summer and possibly after summer, but I imagine by the end of summer we'll be out of these grab
yeah,
boxes.
There's not yeah. a ton of them.
No. So moving on to the other news, gentlemen. We have to start with the sad news, I think.
Oh yeah, let's not get it.
So James Horner has died.
Yeah, rather unexpectedly in a
plane crash.
Plane crash.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was kind of dark. When I saw it mentioned on the news last night, and there was like a weird sort of legal thing where they like couldn't say who the pilot was until the local authorities had released it and stuff like that. So they just said that the pilot had died and the plane was registered under his name. But yes, it did turn out to be him, which is really sad. Mm-hmm. Aside from the fact that he's just a great composer, for me in particular, he was the first composer that I think I discovered.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was telling Nick earlier.
He was in your basement.
John Williams was kind of like, everybody knew him.
Yeah. Right?
He was like the big, if you're going to know one composer as a kid, you know the guy who did Star Wars and Superman and Close Encounters and all that.
Yeah.
But, like, a lot of the kind of genre movies that I was watching as a kid, notably, like, Star Trek II, and also Krull.
Yeah.
And, Willow and Something Wicked This Way Comes, and a lot of stuff I was watching in the early and mid-80s, he did the scores to, and I noticed who his music was really cool.
Right.
Oh, and Aliens.
Yeah.
That was a big one.
Aliens got great music.
Yep. Yeah. You know, I remember there was a time when Aliens, the big, you know, dun, dun, you know, that thing, that was used as a temp track in about a zillion movie trailers.
Yeah.
You know, when they would show the closing half of the trailer where it was all the action stuff, the montage together, that was the music that they used every time.
Yeah.
It's like, of course, he's most famous for Titanic. That was like his big bazillion seller.
Right.
But ironically, probably not super high on any of our lists, I'm guessing.
Right.
It's good, but
it's a good score.
But I'm just saying, you know, he also did Braveheart, Apollo 13. One of his semi recent. I guess it was still late 90s, maybe. But I thought one of his like most kind of rousing scores was. Is it Mask of Zorro?
Mask of Zorro, yeah.
Yeah, he did that, and that was like a really, really great score.
Yeah.
He's like kind of one of the big ones for action adventure movies.
Yeah,
and, you know, obviously, he's done dramas too.
There's always these private plane crashes.
Yeah.
There's definitely some unsafe with the private, and a lot of people flying their own planes. So
yeah, it seems like if you become wealthy, it's a common enough hobby to take.
Yeah.
I don't know anything about the details, like, you know, were there bad weather conditions? Was he under the influence? I don't know any of that
stuff. Right.
I don't know if they'll, you know, if that's going to kind of make its way out. But yeah,
it's too bad.
Don't fly planes, people.
Don't fly planes.
I guess what we're saying.
Yep.
So, but, you know, I will say this, though. I've seen a lot of friends posting tributes, posting his music.
Yeah.
And that is nice to see. You know, he's definitely one of these guys who's going to be really well remembered, and if people want to do tributes, there are endless number of great movies he has done. I believe I will tribute him with, of course, Krull.
Of course. I've actually already seen that tribute posted by our friend Jason Murphy.
Yep.
So, moving on to other movie news, we have a director for Black Panther.
Yep.
Marvel has been pursuing and got Ava DuVernay.
Believe right? that is right? correct. Yes.
Who did Selma.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Yeah, right?
They're going for heavy hitters.
Yeah. So, do they have their Black Panther, Nick? Do you remember?
Yes,
they do, right?
Cast.
Okay. So, that's big.
Yeah.
Selma is like, you know, they're talking Oscars for Selma, I believe.
Yeah.
Or did it already happen?
I thought it won some Oscars, but I don't keep up with awards.
I hate awards.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. We're going to do awards.
You would like
we're going to do awards, though, right?
I like our awards.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. I just don't like award shows.
We're never wrong.
No.
But that's a pretty awesome
that's big.
Director to cast.
And, the only fear, of course, is like, is it going to be too serious?
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Well, like, you know, Marvel has such a tight control of those things. So, and they put, you know, Kevin Feige and those guys, they always put humor in that I suspect that it will still have that feel of a Marvel
movie. And I had to quick Google it. Chadwick Boseman is going to be playing Black Panther. He is also the actor who portrayed James Brown more recently.
Oh, okay.
And also the actor who played Jackie Robinson.
Is this going to be a biopic-style Black Panther movie?
I hope he plays Black Panther exactly like James
Brown. Yeah.
I was going to do a James Brown thing, but I can't.
Yeah, no, you probably shouldn't. All right, the other movie news, diametrically opposed, really, is the director for Spider-Man is a dude named John Watts, who you might know from nothing, literally nothing.
I mean, if he's directed into really obscure horror films.
Really obscure.
You'll know a movie called Clown, which I think Dave just watched.
I just watched, and I cannot say it was a very good movie.
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought it was directed by Eli Roth, but you said it just starred him?
Yes.
Like, I
don't know. That is what I forget who told
he
is. Me.
He was probably the dad in it, and I'm sure that's who
he was. The kid, weirdly. He just walked around on his knees.
Seems like something Eli Roth would do.
Yeah, he's directing new Kevin.
I know how like Eli Roth does like the kind of what you know the torture porny movie Hostel. It was kind of in that darker vein. It was what I consider kind of a crappier vein.
And horror. Then he's doing something with Kevin Bacon called what's
Cop
it called?
Cop Car, which debuted at Sundance Film Festival and actually got a lot of acclaim.
This does not sound like the guy you tap for your Spider-Man movie. It's weird.
That's a weird one. Didn't we see that he had done some stuff for the Onion News Network?
Yeah.
He'd done some videos for the Onion. But it's a weird mix.
It's a weird call.
Somebody it's a weird call, but it could be, I mean, obviously it could be the right call, too. You never know.
It could be. Here's the question.
I don't know that I'd say obviously.
Yeah. Was this Kevin Feige's pick, or was this Sony overriding? That's my question. Because Sony has not had the best taste yet so far in Spider-Man.
Well, it is a joint sort of press release. That they both decided on this.
Yeah, of course that's what the press release says.
Well, and truthfully, at this point, Sony has had three failed attempts for Spider-Man. No, I guess it was just two Spider-Man.
We'll call Spider-Man attempts. Turn off the dark by proxy.
But, you know, I think Sony should just... I mean, it's probably taking a backseat to a lot of this.
I think you're wildly optimistic.
They,
Well, if you look at their money, every Spider-Man movie they've released has earned them less money.
Yeah.
Every movie that Marvel has released has earned them more money.
You know why, Nick? Because people don't see Sony's genius, and this time they will.
I don't think they believe that anymore.
I would love to believe that Sony executives are smart. I don't.
It's weird, too. You know, here's the thing is I can't see an angle on this.
Yeah.
Movies don't spend too much of their budget on directors, do they?
Yeah, usually it's a decent chunk.
It's a decent chunk.
Especially when you've cast your Spider-Man and he's an unknown.
This is like, you know, superhero movies have the potential to pull in so much money.
Yeah.
Why would you not go with somebody who's at least sort of Sam Raimi caliber or higher?
I don't get it.
Because I think Marvel is trying to focus on up-and-coming directors.
Yeah.
Who they can still control.
Maybe so. I just can't.
I don't think they're controlling.
Let's be honest.
I think they're bringing new visions to the movies.
Every good director who's left Marvel... has been I'm so glad to get free of it. As much as they may have enjoyed it. Joss Whedon, Jon Favreau, they have no... I mean, they obviously enjoyed it, but they're also like,
Did you hear this rumor that Disney is or Marvel wants Kenneth Branagh back for the next Thor?
Really? Because he was another one who said, I'm glad to be done.
Yeah, and he is actually weighing the options between that and then I think Something Wicked This Way Comes that they're going to remake.
I haven't actually... I haven't read up on most of these directors. Now, do you actually get a feeling that they're kind of like... that it was just like... The kind of the bigness of it was like too much.
No, it's the grind. It's Marvel having a vision, and they can't just do their vision. They have to have Marvel be like, okay, this has to go in the movie to promote our other stuff. But it's it's working in a shared universe. I mean, that's part of what it is.
And they have to be
like the director of Selma.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where I think anybody would want to do it, but nobody would want to do it more than once.
But they're getting off the beaten path. I mean, James Gunn, if you look at his things, he had some very random movies that he made, like Slither and what was the super-powered one?
Super.
Super. I mean, it nothing like super fantastic. It was, critics did enjoy it, and people liked them.
Yeah, James Gunn had a fan base, but he also came out of Troma Films.
And then the director of the upcoming Doctor Strange is the guy who did, what, Sinister?
That actually makes sense.
Although Sinister was like a lot of people liked that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is definitely the most obscure we've seen. This is a weird call.
Right. Like it could come off.
It could work just fine. It doesn't immediately make me go, oh, I'm excited about Spider-Man again. It makes me go, oh, I hope they don't screw up Spider-Man again. And they've also cast their Spider-Man, Tom Holland, who you might have seen in nothing. He's got some IMDb credits. He's been in a movie called Impossible, I think.
Yeah.
He was uncredited Billy Elliot in the Billy Elliot musical. Sure.
He's just trying to keep their expenses real low so they can get all that CG.
Yeah. He looks young. He could pull it off. I don't know anything. This is a complete unknown to me, both the actor and the director, and that makes me really nervous. But, you know, you need new blood.
Yeah,
maybe,
I was gonna
say, maybe it'll pay off. If it was
the tried and true formula of getting a director and an actor that are known has not worked for them. Amazing
no,
Spider-Man.
But that's the thing is like I don't know I if
like,
Marvel if there was
the last two Amazing Spider-Man. Is that Spider-Man? The actual problem though?
No,
like,
that's
Marvel's
not the problem.
Tried and true directors.
Yeah, that's not the problem.
I think those come down to script issues and stuff.
Yeah, I believe the issue with me is Sony's involvement. If this was Marvel Cinematic doing this. If they were the ones casting these guys, I'd be much more inclined for benefit of the doubt. This is Sony with Marvel Cinematic's involvement, and I'm skeptical until the day I see a trailer.
Well, I think they're pretty involved because they have a stake in this.
I'd
as well,
like to believe that, but I don't.
Because essentially, they're making the Spider-Man movies canon.
Yeah, but all they want is to have Spider-Man in the Marvel movies. They don't give a shit if Sony makes any money. I
agree to disagree.
Yeah, I think you're wildly optimistic. You think I'm very pessimistic.
I think that's just
good in our spectrum. Call me in between because yep. I'm kind of neutral. And actually, the Spider-Man movies of the last several years have actually just completely killed my interest. And you know, like Spider-Man's like my favorite character.
Yeah,
but I grew up with him as my favorite character. It's not that I wouldn't probably be interested if I saw a trailer and it was like a really cool trailer.
Yeah,
but barring that, I have no. Even if a decent director had been attached, I don't know if I'd be excited about it. So they got to prove themselves to me.
See, for me, if they had a great director, I want them to get it right. It's their third chance to get it right, and I want some indication out of all the news that they're going in a different direction. And this is a different direction, but it's not necessarily the direction I was hoping they were going to go in. So
like, who would
we'll
you
see.
Cast as
I have director? I have no idea. I just would have liked it to be a person who directed anything I'd ever heard of. So yeah, we'll see. Moving on to TV, Hannibal's been canceled and everything is terrible.
Is this okay? Yeah, no, it's pretty bad. I'm sad to see it getting canceled.
I love Hannibal, I mean, I know the ratings were terrible, but I also knew they were getting foreign money.
Were they terrible?
The ratings for Hannibal were awful.
Don't people like gross CSI shows? Do they like the formula, but they didn't like Hannibal?
It's too weird, too pretentious art film.
Yeah, that's very art house.
So, and it's. NBC was never the right home for it, but it had foreign backing. It was mostly made of a foreign company. So I figured, okay, NBC doesn't care about the ratings. They're just getting this prestige project. Well, they cared enough to cancel it.
Well, I will say, this is its third season. Third season, they've allowed a lot for...
Yes, oh, they have, because it's not them. They're just airing it, basically.
Yeah, but
I have two questions here.
Yeah.
Well, one is, like, I heard a rumor that it was because, and I saw that, Randy, you mentioned something on Facebook where you're like, I don't want to spoil anything.
Yeah.
But, like, one of the rumors was that they might not be able to get the actress who plays Clarice Starling.
No, not the actress. They don't have the rights to the character.
Oh, to the character.
Because Silence of the Lambs was made by a different studio. So, if that's true, now I've only heard that from, like, one or two people, so I don't know if that's true.
I was going to say, like, so I guess questions were, one, would it if there were never any more episodes, did it end on a cliffhanger?
It hasn't ended. We're in the middle of season 3 right now.
Okay, yeah. So who knows? Maybe they could bring it to some closure. And then the second question is, do you think that there's anybody else who's going to pick it up, which I've heard...
Everybody jumped on that. Everybody thinks that everything gets rescued now. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think Netflix or anybody else is going to pick up a show in its fourth season. It's not impossible, but I'm not holding out hope for a rescue.
Is there any precedent?
Oh, sure. Arrested Development was season 4, and it was low-rated.
But I think Brian Fuller is going to give it to a conclusion.
Brian Fuller had a 5-year plan.
But he's already moved on.
He's going to have to do the Babylon 5.
Yeah.
It'll wrap, probably.
Season 4 was going to be Silence of the Lambs. Season 5 was going to be sort of Hannibal escapey type stuff.
Oh, really? You think they were actually going to cover that ground?
Yes.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yes, they've
but
said
like
that. Well, originally Red Dragon was going to be Season 4 or Season 5. Oh,
that's
and then,
fascinating. I just assumed this was kind of like off in its own sort of like alternate history territory, and they were kind of staking out somewhat new...
Well, it is alternate. This is all before all that stuff.
Right.
But they were going to run into it, and they were going to do it.
Okay. I didn't necessarily assume they would sync up.
So the thing I didn't want to spoil, and this is okay. If you're watching Hannibal, skip over about a minute. They're doing Red Dragon this season.
Uh huh.
Originally, Red Dragon was going to be season 4, season 5, and they decided to go ahead and scoot it up so that Red Dragon is this season, which leads me to believe they knew the axe might be coming down.
Well,
Brian Fuller's already moved on. He's going to be.
He's doing American Gods. And I suspect he knew. And that's why there's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of indications. Once this cancellation news came out, a lot of some stuff made sense. And a lot of the indications are that, yeah, nobody's picking it up, that they don't expect a rescue. It's a bummer. I would have liked to have seen him get his five-season plan out. I really would have loved to have seen them do Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah.
But if they couldn't get Clarice Starling, I guess I understand it. But that bums me out, too. So, yeah, this makes me really sad. This is, you know, we're in this world where low ratings don't matter. Nothing gets canceled. Everything's niche audience. Yeah. And stuff that gets canceled gets rescued immediately by other networks.
Yeah.
So I thought maybe we weren't going to have this for all. There was nothing on the bubble for me this year. I was like, oh, everything I like is getting renewed or is basically safe. I thought, I'm not going to have this heartbreak. And then I have this heartbreak of a show being canceled. And I'm like, the novelty is not fun. I don't enjoy it. I was bummed and surprised to hear this.
What if they had a character named Bernice Darling?
They talked about doing something like that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Where they'd basically, it would be
female FBI.
Yes.
Recruit.
It would be Clarice Starling, but not in name. Yes.
Right.
It'd be like the Carla Gugino on Justified.
Yeah, exactly. They could totally have done it. And I don't think that's the reason they got canceled, but I do think that probably didn't help.
Yeah.
I think the essential reason I canceled is the ratings were low. But it's too bad. I'll say this. Hannibal is still great. I am sure you'll bring it to a close. Watch all the seasons and enjoy it. It is really good. The first two seasons are streaming on Amazon.
And then there's going to be much gnashing of teeth and wailing.
I mean, alone for Mads Mikkelsen.
Yeah, Mads Mikkelsen is the best Hannibal. He's better than Anthony. We talked about this on my TV Dudes podcast, that which would you prefer, Anthony Hopkins or Mads Mikkelsen? And I think Mads Mikkelsen is a better Hannibal.
He might be.
It's interesting. Anthony Hopkins obviously became iconic.
Yeah.
I've heard people critique it as kind of rather overacted.
Yeah, he's chewing scenery and livers.
Yeah.
All right. Other TV news. FX has optioned Southern Bastards.
Yes.
That's so perfect.
It is.
I can't imagine a network more perfect for Southern Bastards.
You know who should helm this?
Who?
Should be Graham Yost.
Oh, that'd be amazing.
Who is that?
He's the Justified. And Boomtown. But, this is their replacement for Justified and Sons of Anarchy.
Exactly right up his alley.
This is red meat masculinity, it's
walking tall.
Southern stuff. It is so perfect for the Justified and Sons of Anarchy crowd. It fits in perfectly. It's only optioned.
Right.
But unless they screw up the pilot like they did with, say, Six Gun, which we never got to see.
Cast for Coach?
I'm sure you can find people. I'm sure you go into the Justified bench, you'll probably find people.
Probably so.
I hope this comes off. I've liked Southern Bastards. I haven't read the second volume at all yet.
I haven't either.
But I like it quite a bit. And I think it would make a good FX show.
It's good news for Jason Aaron and Jason Latour.
Yeah, yeah. So. Finally, there's in TV news, there's the Chew animated series has announced that... We haven't talked about the Chew animated series.
No, I think we may have mentioned it at some point.
Yeah.
There's going to be a Chew animated series.
There's going to be a Chew animated series. I don't even remember where it is.
All done.
I don't remember who's doing it. I think it's just wet internet. But they have Steven Yeun from Walking Dead is the lead. They've got Felicia Day playing his girlfriend.
Amelia Mintz.
And then they just cast their Mason Savoy. He just actually not even cast. He did his voice work already.
Felicia Day is...
It's going to be a half hour or like hour long episode.
I think they're shorts. I think they may be shorter than that.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
I mean, Felicia Day and the person playing
Tony,
they recorded a lot.
They're already done,
ago.
Yeah. Yeah, this is in production. This is not a rumor or people being cast. This is they're doing the work right now.
And then... It was announced that David Tennant
just did all the voice for Mason Savoy. Yes.
Yeah.
Which honestly, I think is perfect. All the voice casting I've heard on has been a lot of fun.
Yeah. Man, how happy must Tennant be with the geek circles? He's Doctor Who. He's going to be Purple Man.
Or is he more like, what do you call it? Who played
Shatner?
Obi-Wan Kenobi?
Oh. Ewan McGregor?
No, the original.
Oh,
he kind of resents it, and he's like, I want to go and do Shakespeare, and he's like, let's do this geek crap.
You know, I don't think so, because Tennant has done Shakespeare.
No, he could do what he wanted.
And he did Broadchurch.
Yeah.
So I think that he must like the geeks, because he must like the geek stuff, because he keeps coming back to it, and he doesn't need to.
Yeah, I want to say that may even be, like, sort of a known thing about him.
I remember when he got interviewed, like, wanting to be a part of, or somebody was suggesting he'd be a part of the Marvel Universe, and he's like, I'm too old to play a superhero.
Yeah.
I don't know who I would play. Turns out he's not too old to play a supervillain.
Yeah.
Which I think people are going to get a wake up call with him playing Purple.
He's going to be great. All right. Moving on to some comic news. I know it's weird for us to cover comics on our podcast, but.
Oh, my God.
A lot of Marvel stuff is sneaking out. Solicits the all new Marvel Now that's going to be solicited. A month from now when the next previews comes out, not the one that came out this week, but next previews will have post-Secret Wars, 8 months later, a lot of new creative teams, yep. all number ones.
So yes, if you are not familiar with it, they are going to do a time jump.
Yep, 8 months.
And so basically, a status quo will have already been established.
Well, what's weird is, like, why I don't quite understand why they would bother to do the 8 months thing. I mean, I guess that means that they don't have to show what happens immediately after Secret Wars
yeah, ends. It makes perfect sense, because then you can have the things, but, stories in
but
progress.
But, like, all the actual changey stuff will occur, presumably, in the Secret Wars or as a result of
it. Sure. But then you don't have to do immediate post-Secret Wars right. work in your first issue.
So in other words, like, say, one of the things we know is that, like, Old Man Logan is going to somehow end up in the regular Marvel universe.
Yeah, and maybe be a mentor
so
to Laura.
We're not going to, like, see his first, like, week on the job as he shakes hands. It's going to be 8 months into it, and he's going to already have caused whatever trouble he's caused.
I think that's really smart, because then you're not doing a bunch of first issues that are basically epilogues for previous stories.
Right, right.
You're doing first issues that are first issues.
Yeah, or
and you can do and you can do flashbacks to what happened in the 8 months before. So we'll just run down the book. So Spider-Man number one is going to star Miles Morales and be by Brian Michael Bendis and Sarah Pacelli. Now, of course, this means Spider-Man's black now.
Yeah, I saw this tearing up the internet,
man. And there's all these clickbaity like Spider-Man is a black man now, and I'm like, okay, everybody chill. Because Spider-Man is going to star Miles Morales. Amazing Spider-Man is going to star Peter Parker. Spider-Woman is going to star Jessica Drew. Spider-Gwen is going to star Gwen Stacy. There are many spiders. That's how it is now.
Yeah, it'd be like if there was, for every one of those, there was an article. It's like, you know, the official Spider-Man is now Spider-Gwen.
Yeah.
The official Spider-Man is now Spider-Woman.
Yeah. No, it's just that they're moving him from the Ultimate Universe to more of a front and center role.
I'm playing devil's advocate here. That is a lot of spiders. But again, I actually think they're all unique. They all have their unique backstories.
Yep. Oh, nobody bring this up to Tom Bale while he's here, by the way.
Yeah.
Tom is famously anti many spiders, which is funny because we're going to be having lunch with him and one of the artists of one of the other spider books.
What's funny is, like, in principle, I kind of agree with Tom. I don't like the general idea of there being so many around. It's really only that they've done such a good job of it that's won me over.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, I am all for multiple versions of characters. I don't have a real problem with it in general.
Yeah.
I don't like
them all running around in the same universe.
I know, and it doesn't bother me. It's not like an
that's
invalid.
A failing on your part,
it's
Randy.
Not an invalid view.
I love seeing them interact, so I guess I'm a huge fan of seeing a bunch of them.
Wait, are you saying we're a spectrum?
Because I love seeing Miles Morales talk with Peter Parker, because it's sort of like him mentoring a young Spider-Man.
It's the kind of thing that I could enjoy, like as like you know, as an event, like the Spider-Verse thing or something like that. But I actually don't want to see you know that like as a counterpoint. I think you know the Bat Family sometimes gets too large. But if there were like five literal Batmen out there and they were all consulting and stuff with each other, it'd just be weird and goofy.
Yeah.
So you're saying Morrison's run was weird and goofy because he did have that.
Morrison's run was weird and goofy. I mean, that's fair. No, it's funny. Remember, Nick, when we did the solicits way back when, every now and then when they do a reboot, we'll do these fun little things where we're like, what would we do if we were rebooting right now?
Right,
maybe time for another Marvel one.
It's possible.
But I pitched a Spider-Man book that was basically Peter Parker was the mentor, Miles Morales was the... So this will be kind of similar to what I was kind of hoping to see. So
do we know that Dan Slott is sticking with Amazing Spider-Man?
We don't know, but I...
Actually, I was going to ask, like... Do we 100% know, like, have they solicited Amazing Spider-Man?
No, we don't 100% know.
Have they shown any pictures that have Spider-Man in the track?
I thought they've said that Amazing Spider-Man will continue.
They haven't 100% said. So, yeah, it is possible that people are not over-freaking out and that Miles Morales will be the only Spider-Man. But that is also weird to be freaking out about because he's a cool character. What's wrong with that?
Yeah.
Well, it would be weird to retire the character that is the 100% most emblematic character of the company.
Especially when they're rebooting as Peter Parker.
Unless it was a knock at Sony that they're trying to sort of be friends with now.
Oh, that would be funny.
I think Randy's right. We'll have just multiple Spider-People.
We'll have Peter Parker. Although, I mean, what if they decide to go and give Peter and Mary Jane and his daughter a happy ending?
Off in like some multiverse or something like that where they could bring him back.
Or they're in the Marvel universe where they're just he's retired.
Where he's a teacher and she's a
or he runs his business. I mean,
he runs
I would love to see that. We know eventually Peter Parker will be Spider-Man again in time for the Spider-Man movie to come out. So I would not mind 8 or 10 months of Miles Morales as Spider-Man. I'd be okay with this. We don't know.
And we know that Miles Morales is on the Avengers
What I do know is that like the female Thor, like Falcon being Cap, there's no reason to freak out about a little diversity at Marvel. For one thing, it's a good thing. For another, the character you love is going to be the character you love again. That's the way that the arc of Marvel Universe bends. The arc of the universe bends toward justice. The arc of Marvel Universe bends toward sameness.
What else do we have in the Marvel Universe?
All right, so other news from the Marvel Universe. Doctor Strange is getting a new book. Doctor Strange has not had an ongoing in a while.
20 years, I think.
20 years.
So we read.
And this is Jason Aaron writing, which I'm very excited about.
But I'm worried he needs to say he's sticking with Thor because I want him on Thor.
You know, I bet he's not. I bet somebody else is going to take over Thor. And I'm okay with that.
No, Jason.
No, Jason Aaron's. But Jason Aaron's really good. I like Jason Aaron's stuff. And his art is by Chris Bacalo. And Bacalo could be perfect for Doctor Strange.
Well, you saw the preview art that's right.
No, I didn't look.
It's beautiful.
Because Bacalo's storytelling is not always great.
Right. He has a sort of arcane sequential style.
Works perfectly. Doctor Strange, arcane.
Arcane in the sense of indecipherable.
Yeah.
But you can look at Doctor Strange is perfect to decipher.
And you can say that looks pretty. I don't know what happened.
Yeah.
I like his style. I like his covers. I would have to see how he does on the interiors.
Well, the last time he worked together with Jason Aaron was on Wolverine and the X-Men,
which
was the best that Bacalo has been in a long time. So
yeah.
I'm hopeful. I would have hoped for a different artist to be the artist, but I'm interested.
They are changing Doctor Strange up a little bit.
Concept wise,
he now doesn't use magic all the time. He's got different various weapons that he uses.
Interesting.
We saw an image of him with a giant axe. We've seen him with a bow and arrow.
Do you think this is to tie into the movie take on him?
I don't know if it is, but basically the article said that he's not reliant upon his magic because his magic there is a price for everything that he
does. Into the movie.
That'll be interesting. I'm curious to see where that goes. I mean,
yeah, to me, Doctor Strange is a magic user.
Yeah.
The only reason why, I think this might be a good idea is, sort of on a commercial level, simply he has never quite seemed to take with audiences.
Yeah.
I still think that there may be a version out there
article did say that Jason Aaron wants to go more superhero with him.
Really interesting. I don't know. I'm with Dave in that I like him as a magician, all these powers, flying around with a cloak, but
my problem with him being, just the Sorcerer Supreme, and he will still be that, but it's he can take on any problem. I mean, that's essentially anything.
You could have his powers become more limited.
Yeah,
there's any number of reasons.
That's also the Superman fallacy. That's the
right.
He's too powerful to write. It's not true. No, a good writer doesn't have to worry about a character being too powerful.
Right.
I agree.
So the reason I'm excited about any kind of change is that Marvel has proven to do pretty well with these reboot
right.
and these changes.
Yeah, and I agree.
So I have a lot of faith in them.
No, I agree. I'm looking forward to it.
Also, changing up is Captain Marvel.
This
was a pretty big change up.
Yeah, Kelly Sue DeConnick is the originator of that character. And
well,
she
didn't create Carol Danvers.
But she created the Captain Marvel version.
Present day thing,
And she is stepping away so that Tara Butters and Michelle Fazekas, who ran Agent Carter, can write it, and Chris Anka on art.
So we have TV people coming.
I think this is great.
But Agent Carter was fantastic.
Well, and it's important that Captain Marvel be a feminist icon, and Agent Carter was a feminist show. And I think that they're going to bring that to it, and I think that's really cool.
Yeah.
To be honest, I'm not a huge DeConnick fan. I love Bitch Planet, but I haven't always clicked with her writing.
Right. I assume, by the way, that it was essentially, would be considered a feminist comic in that sort of general sense of having a self-possessed and strong female character in the lead role. But it did not click with me early on, although I really liked the artwork.
I've heard great things. I mean, Dan, our fellow friend,
lamenting its loss. Dan, who used to work
there.
But it sounds like no matter kind of where one stands on it, whether you were big into the run or didn't care, it seems like the replacement is a pretty well considered replacement.
Yeah, this seems to be a handing off of the reins, not a someone's being removed.
Right.
And I think there's going to be a lot of that. A lot of people don't like change in comics.
Yeah.
And so.
If you're reading the big two, you kind of have to learn to accept it, though.
Yeah, there's going to be...
Or you're just going to be frustrated all the time.
There's going to be people change. I mean, there's a lot of people who are changing books, and that's fine. I know there's going to be at least one creative team change. I don't know what it is yet. I haven't seen it yet. But there's going to be one creative change where I'm like, oh, I was really enjoying their take, and
We know Mark Waid will be leaving Daredevil.
Mark Waid, but that's time. It's time.
Yeah.
I want him to leave before he's done a bad story. And so far, he hasn't done any I didn't like.
You know, it's interesting on the change front... I don't think any of us, based on the preview art and the reveals, were thinking that the new Superman thing, buzz cut bro Superman
with
a Superman T-shirt, did not look like a strong concept.
No,
And I think I'm the only one who's been closely following it, but in execution, it's actually proved to be really good with sort of an explanation for all of the above, And none of it has, like, really removed him from the kind of that key character he is. He's just a little bit more on the, kind of on the run, a little bit more pushed out of the big superhero spotlight at the moment.
But it hasn't changed him himself. He's still Superman.
Right. And yeah. So, it's one of those things where, like, on the surface, I was like, I don't know about this, but it proved itself. Or at least it's so far it has.
On the surface, he looks calm and ready to drop bombs on Krypton.
Keep going.
Sorry, that's it. That's all I got. he is like Eminem now, right?
Yes. Yes.
Finally, because there are people asking on my Facebook, Spider-Gwen will return. New number one, same creative team.
This was just announced like today, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Spider-Gwen isn't going anywhere. I wasn't sure because that was a really kind of abrupt ending where they were like, this book's over. Secret Wars. Yay.
It was announced that she's still in her own world.
Yeah.
She will be making trips back and forth.
Do we know the creative team?
It's the same creative team.
Yeah, it's still.
Because there was some wondering because the writer or the artist got in a kerfuffle with another artist.
Did he?
Well, you know the thing.
Oh, they went Frank Cho?
Yeah.
Oh, that was a while back.
Yeah. I just wondered, like, that was a little bit public,
yeah.
The way that played out, and yeah. I wondered if that was going to have any repercussions.
Nobody cares what Frank Cho thinks.
that's good to hear it's coming back. I honestly feel like I've had a lot of kids coming in looking for Spider-Gwen stuff.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of, like, getting out there.
Yeah.
I don't know if, like, the national sales numbers are very strong. They're pretty good for
They
us.
Must be doing all right.
But, like, there was this little young boy, I'm going to say he was, like, around 10 or so the other week, and he got Spider-Gwen, and he was, like, ridiculously excited about it.
That's awesome.
Well, it hasn't been confirmed yet, but the people who do the Marvel toys, the Marvel Legends,
yeah.
they're definitely taking notice of all the new characters that are popping up.
Mm-hmm. And in quick, they don't jump on those
in
faster.
Quick fashion. Well, I think it's actually just a limitation of sort of, you know, body types and stuff they have.
Right.
But yeah. if the rumors are to be true, the next couple of waves will have people, and Spider-Gwen is amongst them.
Yeah, I want Spider-Gwen. I want the new Spider-Woman. I want Silk.
They should probably do Thor.
You're getting a Spider-Gwen. You're getting a Silk.
That's
and,
nice.
They should definitely
do Thor, yeah.
I would love them. Thor's the only one that has been announced because she could fit into the Avengers wave.
Yeah, maybe
done,
so.
Which I think we'll be seeing another wave.
Have they done a Miles Morales figure yet?
He is coming.
Okay.
He is in
I was gonna say,
the next wave.
He's about to be so big that I bet there will be multiple Miles
yeah.
Morales.
The big Spider-Man from the next Spider-Man wave is Ben.
What about Ms. Marvel? They announced Ms. Marvel?
Wait, did you mean Ben Reilly? Weird.
Which, I love the...
Yeah, the Scarlet Spider turtleneck version.
Okay, I was wondering if it was like Ben Reilly in his like street clothes or...
No,
his
no it's the hoodie Spider-Man.
Which I love.
Ms. Marvel? Have they announced Ms. Marvel?
Miss Marvel? No, not Kamala Khan.
Because you'd think that would be an obvious one. I mean, they've done Captain Marvel.
Yeah, they've done Captain Marvel.
You know, by the way, since Miss Marvel is kind of a smaller figure, they should just put it with Lockjaw.
Yeah, that would be
comment.
Amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I made the comment. They should just make Lockjaw part like a...
They should totally
build a
do
figure,
it.
Build a figure.
Well, also because Nick knows Lockjaw is the biggest challenge of his custom creating career, and if they made it for him... That would take
yes.
that off your
any,
plate.
Any animal creature is hard
That's
to make.
That's going to be tough. However, your latest figure was an animal creature.
It was. I made a devil dinosaur.
And
a barbarian Steve Rogers.
The Secret Wars variant.
It turned out really, really well. I was very pleased. Yeah, and it got immediately snatched up by a person.
See, Nick, you're going to have to make a display of all the action figures you've made.
But we can't do Devil Dinosaur because it's gone.
I know.
I mean, I still...
We know the person who has it.
Yes.
So we could break into their place and steal it.
Or ask them for it. But
whoa. Let's not get...
Dave, you and your heists.
Let's not get confrontational. Let's just steal it. I'd rather ask forgiveness than...
Do we have any more news right now?
No, that about wraps it up for us this week. We'll be back in just a moment to talk about comics for this week. We are talking comics for the week of Wednesday, June 24th. And, gentlemen, I want to lead with a book that did not come out this week or the week before, and that's Secret Wars number 4.
Oh.
Just in case people are wondering, we believe, we'll know for sure tomorrow, that it should be coming out next week. It's been delayed.
Yep.
However, despite the fact that Secret Wars has been delayed and that the domino effect is that other books from Secret Wars have been delayed,
right.
there are still, like, I don't know. I read like 15, 20 books this week.
Yeah, an amazing amount.
There are lots of comics to read and lots of new stuff. So we'll be diving in as DC and Marvel are both in the middle of their DC's and doing their sort of post-convergence relaunch.
Yeah.
and Marvel is still rolling out Secret Wars books.
Secret Wars, yeah.
So we'll be talking about lots of new books and stuff. Dave, one of the big books this week is a new one from DC that we all liked.
Yeah, yeah. And somewhat unexpectedly, although mm-hmm. I think we all had an interest in it at least, this book is We Are Robin, number one.
We Are Robin?
We Are Robin.
We Are Robin.
Oh, we Are Robin.
Okay.
The you know, it's interesting. Over the years, I've noticed Robin, along with Nightwing, has a strong fandom.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Lots of people like it. It doesn't seem like DC has particularly capitalized on it over the years. It's, you know, there's they have a Robin comic, but they haven't for a while. Damian is probably the closest that they have.
Although still, I don't think DC understands how much people who love Damian love Damian.
Well, yeah. He has his own book now.
Yeah, I know, right. But
that's, you know, that took years to get around to.
And then, what was the last time? Chuck Dixon, he had his Robin book for a long time.
Tim Drake was super popular for a long time.
The 90s was a big time for him. But yeah, I get the feeling like, I don't know why they're kind of like, you know, at a time when youthful heroes are, you know, this is a good time for
him. I guess it's true. When New 52 rolled around, Robin just got thrown in Teen Titans and got forgotten.
Yeah.
So this one is an interesting concept, though. It is not literally about a single Robin, as the title would indicate. But about what it looks like we'll be forming up a sort of group of kids who will take on that identity as a group. But it is focused on one character, and the writer, Lee Bermejo, best known as an artist, who does these like really detailed stuff. He did like the Joker graphic novel a few years ago, right, with Brian Azzarello,
He also wrote a series for Vertigo, and I'm blanking on
Suiciders. He's writing and drawing a book called Suiciders,
that's currently going?
Yep.
Yep.
We've never really seen him tackle like sort of the superhero side of things, at least, you know, as straightforward as this. And this is sort of street level. What you've got is a kid, young African-American kid living in Gotham who's an orphan because his parents were seemingly killed,
They're
missing.
They were half. You have to realize that this is taking place right after Endgame,
right?
Which Joker released a gas that turned everyone into sort of Joker's like zombies,
right?
And has basically caused mental problems with a lot of people. Many families are destroyed in the sense that parents are missing, children are missing,
right?
And
it's almost like a natural disaster.
Yeah, it's like no man's land.
You know, Joker basically is a natural disaster for Gotham City.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I've not been reading Batman for a while, and so I didn't know any of this.
Yeah,
but I didn't feel left out of any of this.
No. They tell you all about the sort of that stuff. He's kind of looking for his parents,
right?
And he seems to be a kid who's. He's got some kind of like fight training and stuff like that. Where did he? Do we know where he picked that up? He seems kind of acrobatic and like he gets involved in sort of a schoolyard brawl early on, and he's got kind of that Robin energy where it's not like a brutal fight. He's kind of acrobatic and flipping around and kind of being a wise ass.
Yeah,
he's immediately likable.
Yeah,
you get to see some other characters in there. Was it Leslie Tompkins?
Young Leslie Tompkins.
Yeah, long running Batman character. His doctor friend who usually runs sort of like clinics for, you know, like in the poorer sections of town. She's very altruistic.
She's the bleeding heart liberal.
She's the bleeding heart liberal.
You know what? It just occurred to me.
Huh?
Now that she's young and Green Arrow's young, they should hook the two of them up.
I don't know that she's that young. Although it's hard to tell.
She's pretty young in this art.
The art, by the way, is really good. It's somebody who I don't know.
Somebody new. I don't know this guy either.
I'm going to get to the title page is a few pages in on this one.
But it's, the art on this is really, really good. And it's got.
I'm not going to be able to find it.
Go to the cover.
There we go. Jorge Corona?
Yeah.
Know me?
I'm trying to place the style, but it's got that sort
you
of...
You know what reminds me of? Who's the guy who did the Grant Morrison Vertigo graphic novel with the toys and crap?
Oh, Jason Murphy.
No, that's
Jason Murphy's our friend.
Sean Murphy.
There's a little bit of a Sean Murphy vibe.
I can see that.
With a little bit of, like, I don't want to say quite Umberto Ramos.
But no, but I was getting that influence, yeah.
A little bit of that
like
cartoon
style. Spider-Gwen.
Spider-Gwen was the other
one. Yeah.
The exaggeration on the characters, which is great. It's great cartooning. Is in that. So something of the same vein as Spider-Gwen.
But before we get off Leslie Tompkins, I do want to say... Amanda Waller needs to stay fat, and I don't like skinny Amanda Waller, but I'm okay with young Leslie Tompkins. It's a weird call, but I'm okay with it.
I'm sort of neither here nor there on that. Everybody in the New 52 seems to be younger.
I felt Lee Bermejo used her well.
Yeah, I liked liked what he did with her here.
So a lot does happen in here, and in that first issue, there are some interesting implications as to where his parents may be. I don't know who this person is. I'm just pointing
the bad guy. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know either.
The threat in it. But you know what it reminded me of, Randy? You remember that obscure and not so great Batman animated series first season episode where Batman is homeless or whatever?
Yep.
And there was like, and there was like also that in the Underdwellers.
The Underdwellers. Story. Yep.
It couldn't help but remind me of like it almost could be a rethink of some of those ideas.
Yeah.
But anyway, there are interesting implications for where his parents might be. There's an interesting intersection of like him and this other group of Robins, or the people look like they're maybe going to contact him.
Yeah. Well, the bad guys, Dave, remind me of anything of like Fagin and from Oliver, which, of course, I think that the link – we haven't seen this, but I think the link between all these Robins may be orphans, that Robin has always been an orphan, and I think that they may be doing some homelessness orphan kind of thing going on.
That's an interesting notion, yeah. I think what will intrigue people most about this, you know, after – you know, beyond the just the likable protagonist – is that notion of like, oh, this is something that I could become, especially like for teenage readers.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a lot of books I think that are like that in that sense of like, there's sort of you know, you can always do wish fulfillment with superheroes. That's
right,
what
sure.
you stand for. But there's it's a little bit easier when they're kind of like normal kids who are putting on Robin type costumes as part of like an organized group, but they don't have like super gadgets or anything.
Right.
Like,
Yeah, this would loan itself well to group cosplay, that kind of thing.
Exactly. Anyway, it's a promising start from a book that I did not necessarily have any particular expectations of, and it's a neat concept.
It had a lot of the feel of stuff like Ms. Marvel and Miles Morales and
Spider-Gwen,
all that stuff. Sort of young protagonist, new character. I really liked it. I was surprised how much I liked it.
What else you guys got?
All right, so speaking of surprised, I liked it. I am not a giant fan of Age of Ultron, and Marvel Zombies has sort of worn out its welcome for me. So I did not have a whole lot of expectations, and James Robinson, though I loved his Starman, has not written a lot of stuff I've liked of late,
right.
Other than that weird Airboy, which is kind of fun, but not what I would expect from this.
But he's very involved in Secret Wars.
He's doing Armor Wars as well. And Armor Wars, I'm like,
actual book is?
This book is Age of Ultron versus Marvel Zombies.
So it's got everything you hate.
Yeah, it should not work. And Steve Pugh is on art, and Steve Pugh is a guy I've liked. But didn't love.
He was doing some great stuff when he was working on Animal Man, though.
Yeah, I mean, but I've liked him. I've never been liked him. Like, but this is Steve Fuchs sort of channeling his inner Sean Phillips a little bit.
Yeah,
It's got that sort of dark. Because I mean, Marvel Zombies was originated by Sean Phillips
it
on
was.
Art,
That's
so
true.
They're trying to do that. And this is really interesting. It's basically we've seen the Shield throughout the battle world when people get accused of crimes or whatever, they throw them off the Shield into this dead zone. The Shield is the big wall that protects the rest of the territories.
Oh, right.
And if you screw up, you get thrown out
into the world where there's apparently Annihilus' insects, and then Ultron robots, killer robots,
and
Marvel Zombies.
Which any one of those alone would presumably be a death sentence.
Yeah. So it opens with Tigra, who's been thrown out there dealing with some zombies and some Ultron robots.
I was just I only got a chance to look at the beginning, but Tigra is not what you call one of the better-known Avengers.
Nope.
She's a C-lister, although she's had some good story arcs. But having her, play pretty seriously and very fairly formidably was a nice opening, I thought.
Yeah. The not to give too much away, but the lead of this book seems to be the Hank Pym from Timely, which is going to be the 1872, the Western Marvel. So he's like a tinkerer who was trying to build a mechanical man, and Doom didn't like that, and so he's being thrown out there. And they give him a choice of what part to be thrown into, and he chooses the Ultron part. And it'll be interesting to see where that goes.
Tinkerer guy.
And I don't want to give away the last page, but the last page had a bunch of fan favorite characters and made me very happy. But I like this a lot. It's very much a it starts off a sort of survival story, shows this sort of horrible realm, and then pitches this new character into it, and about, you know, how is he going to interact with these robots that he has a fascination with and that kind of thing. It's a really good first issue, and I liked it quite a bit.
Yeah.
Nick?
Yes, and mine is a surprise pick, too, and it is not Secret Wars, which has been
that's a big surprise.
I call you a traitor.
I am a traitor. This is actually a DC book. It is one that I just kind of picked up on a whim because the notion sounded fun. But this is the 7th issue of Deathstroke.
Which is the new jumping on point.
New jumping on point from Tony Daniel, co-written by, I think, James Bonney. But Tony Daniel is actually writing and drawing it. I've always had a soft spot for Deathstroke. I think as a kid, he just visually looked great.
Sure.
Yeah. Also, really enjoyed the 90s series, Deathstroke the Terminator.
Yep.
So, I'm predisposed...
He's earning a big new audience right now, of course, through Arrow and...
Right.
Yeah.
I'm predisposed to liking the character, but from up until now, I really haven't paid much attention to Tony Daniels' story, other than I remember he got, like, de-aged a little bit, so yeah. He's now sort of... In his mid-30s.
He looks like he does on Arrow.
He looks like he does on Arrow.
Yeah, pretty much.
He's not the guy with white hair.
Right.
But he's presumably the same badass with black hair.
Yep. But this is sort of him being cast in not a video game, sort of like God of War, because his new goal is to kill gods. And this one
this is still like a contract or something, not like this is gonna be a new direction forever.
And this is not gonna spoil a lot, but basically Hephaestus comes down and builds a sword, and he is sort of the go-between the person who hired him, who hires Deathstroke. He's the go-between.
Right.
And he basically
Hephaestus is his cue?
Yes, essentially.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, which I thought was really interesting. And they're their back and forth is fun. The sword is something that Slade actually does not care for. It feels like it's, you know, overcoming him a little bit and moving on its own, and he does not like that.
See, yeah, he seems like a guy who would want every weapon to be what it does.
Well, he wants to be in control.
It. Yeah.
He wants to be in control. And I thought that was a neat notion.
You don't want one of these Greek shields that talk and crap.
Yeah.
Hey, Deathstroke, how's it going? Jesus, shut up.
Shut up, shield.
And he gets hired to break into Tartarus.
Yeah.
And to do that, he has to go to Themyscira, because that's where one of the secret ways in is.
Okay.
And it's actually just a really fun concept. I think Tony Daniel did a good job of capturing Slade. You get into some backstory stuff with him and his son and daughter. You know, I just thought
does
it was
he
fun.
Look just like his son now because of the de-aging?
In a conversation, they do tackle sort of his daughter's reaction to the way he looks. I actually felt like one of those things where no stone was left unturned. Like, they tackled everything. It's got a good hook. It's got the artwork. You know, if you've liked Tony Daniel in the past, he's actually...
He looked pretty good for this kind of book.
Well, yeah, and I want to say he's gotten better and better as time has gone on. He's really found his groove. But I really, really dug it. I thought it was fun.
It looks fun to me. I'm curious now.
As a concept, it seems a little ridiculous. Like, Deathstroke is kind of more of a street level mercenary, but he's a guns guy.
Yeah.
He's not a gods fighting guy.
Yeah.
But because he is like known as like sort of the great mercenary in the whole world, it does sort of make sense to that even the gods, who certainly in a zillion Greek myths and Norse myths and stuff, have gone to human champions for them to back their plays. I kind of like the idea.
And I loved the notion of Hephaestus being the person who builds his arm.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. That's really good, actually.
He's like, I need you to build me a sniper rifle, Hephaestus.
He would build the best sniper rifle ever.
All right.
Shoot fucking shields out.
Yeah. All right.
Other books we got, Randy?
Yes. Yeah, so it's a pretty big week. Also on my list, Howard the Duck number 4. Howard the Duck, it's in the running for my favorite new series this year. It's still really funny. This one guest stars Doctor Strange. So good. Grayson number 9, which is the start jumping on point, which is really sort of jumps right back into the story.
Yeah, it really does.
X-Men 92 number 1 by Chris Sims and Chad Bowers and Scott Koblish on art. This is basically, I thought it might be just a nostalgia throwback to the 90s cartoon X-Men. And it is that team. And it does have that, but there's more to it than that. And it's really good. If you're a classic X-Men fan at all, if you like this team, I think you'd be pretty pleased with it.
It definitely had the vibe, the dialogue. Even a little bit of the slightly heavy exposition.
Yeah.
Also the action sequences and the character banter.
Yeah.
I think will be a lot of fun for people who like that.
Well,
era.
It opens, this is not a spoiler, it opens with the X-Men playing laser tag. And I have a soft spot for the X-Men playing sports. So.
Right. It was a kind of a new spin on the traditional team-building exercise that's also kind of strategic.
Yeah, I like that a lot. Daredevil continues its run towards the closing, and it's still a great run. Daredevil 16 this week. Ant-Man Larger Than Life number 1 is a... it's got some reprints of the first Ant-Man stories, but the lead story is actually a... it's a movie tie-in. It is Hank Pym, as young Hank Pym, sort of learning to control ants for the first time. And
when I was a kid, first learning to control ants.
Sure, it's really good. If the movie trailers have you at all intrigued about the Ant-Man movie, This is a good non-spoiler way to sort of get into it a little bit, and I thought that was a good story. MODOK Assassin number 2 is a lot of fun. It's MODOK and Angela 1602. It's takes place in Killville where all the villains are. It's a fun book. Punisher number 19, with the world ending, Punisher decides to take a job from the Howling Commandos and go start murdering terrorists.
So crazy.
It's pretty interesting. S.H.I.E.L.D. number 7 is the most S.H.I.E.L.D. TV of any of the S.H.I.E.L.D. issues so far, because it's got Mr. Hyde, it's got Daisy Johnson, it's got Phil Coulson. It's an interesting read. If you like those characters, it is a pretty much a dealing with the father-daughter relationship between the two of them.
Out of curiosity, so are they changing up Mr. Hyde so that he is more like the TV show version?
A little bit. Yeah, they did tweak it a little bit. Same with Daisy Johnson, they tweaked her a little bit. But it's not the TV version. Her Sky nickname is a nickname in this. It's not like she was originally from the S.H.I.E.L.D. TV show.
Right,
so,
right.
Fight Club 2 number 2 is bizarre and kind of amazing, and I don't know if I understood everything, but I'm really enjoying that book. Then there's Image Books. Captara number 3 by Chip Zdarsky and Keegan MacLeod. Legacy of Luther Strode number 2. Wayward number 9, which is the Japanese mystic book that I've been really enjoying. Southern Cross number 4, which is Becky Cloonan and Andy Billinger's sci-fi book. And Fade Out number 7 continues Brubaker and Phillips' sort of noir Hollywood thing. Nick, what else is on your stack?
I have E is for Extinction number 1. This is the Secret Wars callback to New X-Men by Grant Morrison, with Chris Burnham, who, if you've enjoyed the art on Batman Inc., he is now writing, with Jose Villalobos doing artwork. It was very entertaining.
Burnham, of course, is a Frank Quitely, very strongly Frank Quitely influence, so it makes sense for him to do the Quitely looking X-Men.
Although he's not drawing.
No, but it, really, because it looks like him.
You know, no,
it's another person.
Actually, Ramon Villalobos
also
looks like him. Okay,
it is right. Very
Maybe
much in that
slightly
school.
More exaggerated than
yeah.
But
than
Burnham, being Grant Morrison's friend, is taking this over. I also have Korvac Saga number 1, which I haven't read yet, but looks interesting, starring like the Guardians 3000
and Wonder Man.
And the second issue of Infinity Gauntlet, which I thought was fantastic.
It really was.
It is a great survival stuff.
It's one of my favorite Secret Wars books. That and whatever the one was last week that I said was my favorite. Thor's and Infinity Gauntlet are my favorite Secret Wars books.
It's my favorite, and this one is my other favorite.
Yeah.
Aquaman sees the new return.
He's got a new costume.
Issue 41, he's got a new costume. He's throwing tridents. I mean, what could be wrong?
Sure.
Last Days of Black Widow starts up. Again, I haven't had a chance to read it, but it's gorgeous as always by Phil Noto, artwork, and Nathan Edmondson.
The gorgeous Phil Noto.
Yes, I'm sure he's a very gorgeous man. Justice League 3001, because Justice League 3000, you know.
Time moves on.
Time moves on.
Right.
Only the DC future does time move
this
on.
This one sees a female Guy Gardner, and there's a guest from another universe.
Yep.
It's interesting.
Okay.
This book.
That's my other favorite.
This is probably my second favorite after Thor's. And Planet Hulk is just a barbarian story.
It's pulp adventure. Barbarian Cap in savage Greenland.
Yep. And
With Devil Dinosaur. It's great. I love Planet Hulk.
Yeah. And the last book I have is Green Lantern Lost Army number 1, which sort of sees the Green Lantern Corps destroyed and a few remnants remain and sort of are gathering their forces, trying to deal with things.
Okay.
So that's going to be like Jon Stewart and...
It's Jon Stewart, Kilowog, Arisia, and a few sort of...
Nort?
No, there's no Nort.
No Nort.
But there is Krona.
What about Chip?
Krona, which is actually the person who, like, destroyed the Guardians, but somehow he's, like, mind-wiped. It's interesting. So if you've enjoyed any of, like, the past Green Lantern stories, I think this is going to be right up your alley. Dave, what do you have?
The only thing that y'all haven't mentioned is a handful of DC books. Superman number 41 hits this week.
I did not mention this because you were mentioning it.
It continues the Truth storyline. It's the fourth issue in it, but it actually stands pretty much on its own, too. It's the new creative team, which is Gene Lun Yang.
What is
he known for?
Now, he's been doing the Avatar books for Dark Horse. He's also done a lot of indie books from... He did
American Born Chinese
with Derek Kirk Kim. He did the Shadow Hero, which was sort of a take on the pulp heroes. He did Boxers and Saints, which was in the Chinese Boxer Rebellion. He's a great writer and artist.
I wonder if he was like just a Superman fan, been wanting to write it since forever, or you know how he ended up on the book. But anyway, it continues to have John Romita Jr. on art. And oddly enough, I like Romita's art on this more down-to-earth Superman, where, you know, he's not drawing the costume with all these sort of seams and, like, plates
he's
and stuff on it.
He just gets to draw a T-shirt.
T-shirt and jeans Superman is the Superman that fits his art style. And it's been, you know, continues that storyline. But it does... This is a flashback issue to when Superman was still wearing the costume, at least during parts of it, before his identity got outed. In fact, it doesn't quite show how it happens, but it hinges on sort of this an informant who's like just texting him. It's a mysterious informant. He can't track the person down, but the person seems to have some insider information on him. And I am guessing, although we don't know yet, that you know the fact that we believe like Lois reveals it somehow. I believe this is something where he may have chosen to get out from under the blackmailer's thumb. He may have said, let's do it on our terms.
Because I know that's one of the big issues people have with this, was that they made Lois really terrible if she did this, but maybe that if that if he's involved, that it makes it better.
I think Dave is correct in his guess here. I actually just really liked this issue. I haven't been reading a lot of the Truth stuff, but I'm going to go back and track it down because I thought this issue specifically just got everything right for me.
Well, there's some fun teamwork stuff between Lois, Jimmy, and Superman.
Well, I felt like the relationship, especially with Jimmy and Superman, felt right. I mean, they were joking sort of together. They were investigating together. I thought it was great.
Yeah, and you know, even the classic Perry White was in on the mission with them, and so I thought that was cool too.
We got to see them, you know, have a little celebration as well, which I thought was great.
Yeah, so I've got that one. There's a Batgirl number 41 begins the new story arc, and you know, the first six issues of the sort of soft rebooted Batgirl under Babstar and
Burnside.
That one. Essentially, I feel like they were kind of like, let's get the character to stand on her own before we, you know, drop her into the larger DC universe. Well, here she's been dropped a little more into the larger DC universe because she is encountering, unbeknownst to her own father in the form of the armored Batman suit that is patrolling Gotham now.
That's gonna go
right.
As you, it seems like he may have a thing to round up vigilantes, which would include his daughter. So that is just one of the plot points going on. And then finally, there's issue number 9 of Grayson, which just happens to, you know, that's their new direction for it. There's a sort of a big new mystery going on. There's impersonations and all kinds of other.
There's a caper
stuff going on. There's a caper. Yep. This is still the same artist who's been doing it, right?
Mikhail Janin. Yeah.
Yeah, because the art looks beautiful. I think you could jump in with this, but I would honestly suggest if you wanted to try the book out, I'd say pick up the hardcover.
I agree. This is very much a continuation. It's not as much jumping
in. And I think it'll just be more fun, and we generally recommend that hardcover. So
yes, we do.
Just jump into it.
And there are cool Spiral ID cards this week.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
So if you buy the hardcover, make sure and ask for your Spiral ID card if we still have them.
Yeah.
All right. That about wraps up our comics talk for this week. We'll be back in just a moment to talk about some video games, TV, and movies. All right, so Nick, I understand you saw a movie this weekend.
I did. I saw a movie. We'd actually been wanting to see this movie for a while, just couldn't get our schedules to line up because there were other movies we had to see first.
Yep.
You know, like Jurassic World.
Yep.
No, but
there's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of movies.
It really, really is. But this was the movie Spy, which is starring Melissa McCarthy, Jude Law, Jason Statham, Rose Byrne, and a bunch of other people.
Hard-boiled action thriller.
Yes, hard-boiled action thriller. Actually, I would say the exact opposite of that.
I saw the trailer a ways back, but Liz McCarthy is... What is her job?
No, not at all. She actually plays what would have been...
Oh, an analyst.
She was an agent.
Right.
But she got sort of sidelined because she paired up with a super-secret agent, Jude Law, who is essentially Bond.
Right.
And becomes his sort of... analyst slash person who directs him and
his handler,
and she gets sacked behind a desk, moved into the basement. Allison Janney plays the head of the CIA in sort of just a ball busting, no nonsense, and she's great.
That seems like a role that she could really sink her teeth
into. I'd be somewhat comforted if Allison Janney was the head of the CIA.
Jason Statham plays like supposedly the most awesome spy ever, but he's basically a bumbling Clouseau type.
Nice.
And he eats the scenery like no other person in this movie. Rose Byrne plays the villainess. She's hilarious. But I honestly think Melissa McCarthy gets the shine more because she's actually taken very seriously. She is a badass, and you know, there's just comedy happening around her. She's not taken as a fool like she is in a lot of her other movies.
Yeah.
I think Paul Feig, who directed this, as he directed Bridesmaids and a few other movies, he really brings the humor and the comedy to the characters and gives them a little bit more to do instead of just play them for laughs. And I really found that to be the case with the entire cast. And I just thought the movie, which is sort of an homage to Bond, even from the get-go, because it has its own music opening with the credits and all sort of the cliches that you would imagine in a spy film. I put it right there with sort of like Kingsman and a few other things that we've seen in the past year.
I just think say Get Smart, the movie.
Yo, God, yes.
I don't know if that's a bar you need to clear.
I just had to throw it out there.
No, but honestly, they did a great job with it. I highly recommend checking it out. It was funny because we had a few other friends and some family members say that it was horrible. Don't waste your time. And I couldn't figure it out because Rotten Tomatoes, which has become sort of my barometer for movie going and sometimes television nowadays because they've started doing that as well.
Oh, I didn't know.
Had the movie at a 95%. And it's been like that for
It's pretty high.
Which is insanely high for a movie. And I completely agree with it. It is that good. I would go see it.
Okay, and you did.
And I did, and I paid...
I will consider it for Redbox.
Yep.
Well, honestly, I think my wife and I are very addicted to movies, so...
Yeah, you guys go every week.
We do.
At least once.
And it is sort of our thing, so we definitely see a lot more than I know you do, Dave.
Yeah.
I will consider it when it shows up on HBO.
But the trailer looked fun enough, I thought,
so... Yeah.
Well, the action is great. I was very surprised, because I wasn't expecting great action sequences... But man, they're quite good, and I will say they don't hold back on the blood. They're very violent.
Hey, Randy, although we don't have it on our schedule, I have a surprise movie to drop.
Okay,
out of nowhere. Yeah. I forgot. A few days ago, I saw the first. I rewatched the first Insidious.
Yep.
With Dan. Then we also watched the second one, and the third one is now out at theaters, so I'm going to catch that tomorrow night.
Okay.
But it's an abomination.
Is it really?
Yes.
Oh, that's too bad. I was going to say, the series as a whole is kind of fun. The second movie is definitely not as good as the first, but it's as kind of like...
But I just think it was a step below the first.
Yeah, so for those who haven't seen the first one, it's a sort of kind of haunted house story slash possession. It has its own twists and turns. It was definitely modeled on Poltergeist, where the first half is this kind of, like, creepy build-up. And I think, honestly, that's the series at its best.
Yeah.
But the second half is more in the vein of Poltergeist, in the sense of, you know, where the second half of Poltergeist, where there's, like, actual portals to the other dimension. Sort of an interaction with it, and you know, they do that same kind of thing, and... It is still pretty good and creepy. It's not as classy as Poltergeist.
No.
But that is the direction that also sort of defined the second one. And I found it to be a good kind of... It was a good, fun follow-up. If you like the first one, a fun expansion on, you get to see more of the characters there, sort of. And it looks like the third one, I guess, will focus on the sort of ghost hunter-y type characters.
Yeah, I think it's a prequel. It's a prequel to the one and two.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah,
oh,
it takes place in, like, the past.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and the original incarnation of, I think, the woman.
I assumed it was going to be about I thought it was going to be about the red-faced demon.
Oh,
it might be, actually. They finished dealing with the female ghost in the second one.
Oh, that's right.
So
you're right.
But it was strongly hinted at least, that the red-faced ghost would take
a... Damn, that was a creepy character.
Some of the... You know, one of the things I noticed is that it uses a lot of musical stings to amplify the fears. And in some ways, that's a very cheap kind of way to do it. But, you know, even some of my favorites, like John Carpenter, he was like the guy who invented that, you know.
One and two were directed by James Wan.
Actually, I suppose I should say, like, the guy who did, Bernard Herrmann, who did the score to Psycho, might have done the original shrieking.
Right, yeah, sure.
And in fact, that is what I would most compare. They do these shrieking violins during the certain scenes in Insidious. And it can be a very startling effect. Like, it actually, like, makes my skin, like, creep up and tingle at when it's at its best, just because of that piercing sound. So James Wan didn't direct the third, though?
Nope, he did not.
Oh, maybe that's why it stinks.
Sorry, you're paying money to see it.
Oh, that's all right.
No, you know, you must report back.
Hopefully it'll just be a, like, what I'm, all I'm looking for is, like, kind of a fun popcorn kind of horror movie at this point. I think it started out... It could, like, just the first half of the first one could have been, like, a notably better than that. The Conjuring, I think, is a pretty superior horror movie.
That one's the best.
But I enjoy the Insidious series.
I have been watching a lot of TV, as always. And this Sunday was HBO's new stuff.
Yep, it was.
So I watched True Detective, which season two.
Critics are saying is awful.
Critics are really hammering, and I don't get it. I mean... True Detective Season 1 was held up as this sort of the best TV show of 2015, and, you know, it had all this weird Cthulhu-esque mysticism and these extra layers, and it had McConaughey and Woody Harrelson, and I think that it sort of came out of nowhere. It was this big, like, art house success.
Right.
But True Detective has always been a crime anthology series.
Yeah.
So, Season 2...
Well, it was planned as such, but I think people, like, took the first season almost as if it was just a miniseries.
Yeah. But I think... Season 2 is very much a L.A. noir. It's a modern day, takes place in L.A. in sort of this small town called Vinci that's outside of L.A. that's trying to sort of have something to do with the new high-speed rail that they're doing, and there's some corruption involved. Mm-hmm. Vince Vaughn plays a mobster who's trying to go straight. Taylor Kitsch plays a motorcycle cop who has some sort of post-war issues.
Mm-hmm.
Colin Farrell is probably the strongest. He plays this sort of corrupt cop who has a tie to Vince Vaughn's character that's explained early on in the first episode.
And then
Rachel McAdams plays a sheriff, one of the sheriffs, who is sort of a hard woman and doesn't brook any guff and that kind of thing.
Is the same creators coming back?
No, it is Nick Pizzolatto, the writer. Okay. And I gather that a lot of maybe he may have said some jerky things in interviews or something like that, or downplayed the involvement of the director, Cory Fukunaga, in the first season, who directed every episode. So there's a different directors on this one, different cast. So really, Pizzolatto he's the continuing aspect of it. And I liked it a lot. I thought it was a really good first episode. I like all the characters. It's still beautifully shot. The first episode shot by Justin Lin from Fast and the Furious.
Wow.
It still looks really great. It's still got that sort of mood. T-Bone Burnett is still doing the music, so the music's choices are still really good. I don't understand why people are disappointed. I thought it was fantastic.
Okay.
You know, maybe that the sort of the first season set the bar so high that sort of like anything that wasn't like instant genius that you could instantly recognize as genius was going to like kind of destined to be critiqued hard.
Yeah, I think people are comparing 10 episodes of True Detective to one episode of True Detective, but that's the critics... The critics have seen three, and they're still comparing it roughly. And I'm just like, I don't get it.
Maybe when you've seen those three, you'll know how stinky it is.
Right? Maybe.
I think it's just fun to hop on the bandwagon of not liking something.
Well, I do think, having heard a couple of the critics, I believe that Pizzolatto may be kind of a jerk, kind of the same way Aaron Sorkin is.
Yeah.
And that may be bleeding into the...
They're influencing.
It may be bleeding into the work, yeah.
Colin Farrell's one of those guys he's done some crappy movies, SWAT.
Yeah.
I think he himself is like capable of being a great actor.
But he's done amazing things, like in Bruges.
Yeah. Well, Farrell's an A-list actor with C-list taste in movies and TV.
Yeah.
So this is him doing something good.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. I'm happy to see it because when he's good, I really like him.
Also, they premiered their two new comedies, one of which was The Brink, which is a sort of political thriller. It involves a coup in Pakistan and what happens with the Secretary of State, who's played by Tim Robbins, is sort of the smarmy guy, which is really fun. What they're trying to do, and there's a couple of fighter pilots out there in the field, and then Jack Black plays a would-be CIA agent who's sort of stuck in Pakistan and becomes
Jack Black.
Jack Black.
Straight role?
No. Is it a comedy?
Okay.
It's a comedy.
Because what you were describing sounded like a serious thing.
No, it is not.
Okay,
it
I
is,
just missed the comedy.
No, this is a this is in the same vein as something like
Veep. I know Jack Black has played in somewhat more serious roles, but I would not expect him to.
And Asif Manvi is his handler from the country, and it's fun. It's not amazing, but it's a good first episode. I'm curious to see where they go with it. There's a lot of smarm with you got Tim Robbins and Jack Black. And that could overwhelm, but I'm curious to see where they go. And the other one that I know Nick watched was Ballers, which is Dwayne Johnson's first TV commitment.
Yeah, and I think I kind of gravitated to this one because I really do like Dwayne Johnson. He's got sort of a fun personality and energy.
Yeah.
You mean Jack Burton?
That is true. I like to think of more from Fast and the Furious and many other movies I've seen. This is sort of a take on... He played for the Miami Dolphins. And then he had an injury that sort of cut him. And it's him sort of handling the finances of other players.
He's in sports management. Yeah. He still knows his agent. And he's sort of handling financial for players, none of whom are great with money. There's a great scene where a guy's like, I bought an elephant. And like, what do you mean, like a toy? He's like, no, man, I paid $250,000. I got an elephant.
Which, I mean, it is a sort of meandering show.
It is so far,
But it felt very much in the vein of Oliver Stone's Any Given Sunday. Yeah. And I thought the performances were good. They were solid. They weren't fantastic.
Yeah.
But it's definitely an interesting start. I'm curious to see where they can go and if they can sustain an actual story.
Well, and Rob Corddry plays his money manager boss guy.
Right.
And
he plays Rob Corddry, essentially.
The funny thing to me is, like, in watching the trailers, this all looked like very much an Entourage-y type dude bro show.
Yeah,
but it's more serious than that. I mean, it's a comedy, but it's got a little more in its on its mind than that.
Yeah, I'm very curious
for doing a little something more.
He's definitely got this is him sort of stretching a little bit beyond being just the action movie guy, and I think that's really cool.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, and last of all, we have a show that Dave and I are both wanting to watch, but Nick has actually watched it.
I've actually watched a lot of television lately. But yes, no, this was actually a sci-fi original series, only one episode out, and it is called The Killjoys, which is referring to a group of individuals that are bounty hunters.
It's a far future.
Yeah, it's a far future. Think Firefly.
Yeah. Everybody knows that IO9 is rather shaky as far as, like, the quality of their reviews, but I saw that their headline was something like, this is the sci-fi action show you've been waiting for, and they kind of liken in some ways to Firefly, but also to, like, Stargate, another sort of more action-oriented
sci-fi. I don't know
sci-fi.
If I can agree with them saying that this is the sci-fi show we've been waiting for, because there's plenty of sci-fi shows.
But they're talking about, like, sci-fi, basically space action.
Right.
And I think there's a lot of choices for space action. There's sci-fi shows, but is there anyone with pew-pew lasers and stuff like that other than this?
Yeah, maybe not, actually. I say pew-pew. That. But there are no pew-pew lasers shows out there. But this one focuses on a group of individuals who are killjoys and sort of how they fit into this world.
Is that just another word for bounty hunters?
Yeah, it's their made-up term for bounty
That's
hunters.
That's a weird word.
They
just ruined their fun ruiners. We were having a great party, and then the Killjoys showed up and murdered our boss.
Wah, wah. Yeah, but no, and there's, different factions. There's other, governments that, run certain planets. So it is very much Firefly world.
So there's interplanetary travel?
Yes.
Spaceships?
I saw the trailer for it, and I was like, it looks okay, but I couldn't quite get a good grasp of it just from the trailer. But the part that interested me most was sort of that world-building stuff where they have this, zone called, the Quad.
Yep.
That's, four nearby planets, I guess, that... is it all in the same solar system?
I think so, yes.
And they each kind of have a different vibe. They were talking about... They were showing... This was kind of behind the scenes, this one has this... they have certain different, very distinct
right.
looks between them. And I assume different, politics and different stratagems and stuff.
Well, and there were some other cool ideas, the notion of, people not having the money to sort of travel between planets, so there are ships that actually will take you as indentured servants, but to pay your way you have to fight, and sort of fight clubs essentially,
right.
and there's that that sort of fits into the overall so first story.
Like a throwback, basically, to sort of like, you know, immigrants crossing over, you know, to America, being forced into
space immigrants.
Space immigrants, just like when Space Tom Cruise and Space Nicole Kidman came over in that Space Irish movie.
Yes, you know yes, Space Far and Space Away.
But
that's the one.
There's no real big star in the show other than Aaron Ashmore, which I didn't know he had a twin brother, but apparently has a twin brother. Okay. But he,
Iceman.
Yep. But this, I think,
from
X-Men. The other people you'll probably recognize if you see them, they're character actors, but no like big thing.
They looked kind of like pretty-ish people on the trailer.
CW-esque?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, maybe so. I actually found it to be very, very interesting with its world building. Not a great show by any means, but definitely a very watchable show.
Solid opener?
Yeah, it was a solid opener.
Good to know. I will give it a look.
I'm waiting for Leviathan Wakes and to be very sad.
Oh, God, I hope they don't screw that up. I'm in the middle of reading that right now. I don't want them to screw it up.
Is that going
to
be a sci-fi thing?
Yeah.
Now, here's a quick question. Sci-fi, of course, has Galactica to their name.
Sure.
Have they had anything sort of big since?
Sharknado.
Sharknado
2. No, they have not done. I mean, they've done a few things like.
Who did 12 Monkeys?
That was sci-fi, but okay, it has not. I mean, it's sort of I think they're sort of middling at best, is kind of what sci-fi is.
Their shows are
landed.
Sort of. The popcorn shows like Warehouse 13.
Yeah.
Kind of gone away, and right. Eureka, and a few other things.
They had Alphas, yeah. Which was really good, but which also I'd call sort of middling, and it didn't do well.
No.
So, yeah.
It seems like this could be up their alley. That is to say, you know. Just enough, maybe like meat to it, to potentially, you know, have you know, to push push a little bit further than just being sort of a trashy action.
I hope so.
Well, the trailers,
actually enough to be fun too.
The sizzle reel or the trailer, or whatever it was that they released a few months ago, It looked solid. It definitely looked like they were throwing more money at it, and money in the sense that they hired some actors that are recognizable. I can't remember everyone who was in it, but I know at least like Thomas Jane was in it, and. I always forget her name. The woman who played 24, the lead terror, the mother.
Michelle Fairley?
No, the mother.
The terrorist, the Muslim.
The Muslim terrorist.
I can't pronounce her.
She's an amazing actress. And she plays the.
She's always really good.
She plays one of the major characters that shows up, I think, both in the first book and the second book. So,
okay. All right.
I am very excited to see what she does with that role.
Who's Thomas Jane playing? Holden or Miller?
The sort of older cop, I think.
That's Miller.
Miller.
I can see that.
Yeah, and I think he's a good call for it. I don't know who's playing Holden, but it sounds like they're doing a pretty good job. I hope they can get the vibe of the books.
We don't want another Dresden Files.
But we don't want another Dresden Files.
Where they take a beloved book franchise that should have gone for years and years and turn it into a really forgettable one-season show.
Yeah. Right. Dresden Files, like, if done right, could have been the next Supernatural.
And still could be. I still think someone could redo it.
Yeah,
I
still think Paul Blackthorne was good for that role, but
yeah, it was just the execution was
horrible, poor. Horrible execution.
All right, that about wraps it up for us this week. Until next time,
Yo-Jo!
And that'll wrap it up for us this week. As always, you can drop us email with topic suggestions, things you want us to hear about, or just comments on the podcast at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at roguesgallery. Check us out on Facebook. Check out our website at www.roguesgallerytx.com. Check us out on Instagram at roguesgallerytx. And if you want to help us out, go over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating and a little review. We'd very much appreciate it. And we will be back next week.